And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I really appreciate that. I'm here because you have a right to know, and because you matter. I know we live in a really weird kind of a existence these days where it seems like the inmates are running the asylum, and you get told all the time you don't matter in so many different ways. But listen, this would not be the same universe without you. You realize that, don't you? And, you know, if the universe didn't need you here, you would already be gone. And so we're glad you're here. Tonight we're going to be talking with two very interesting individuals here this evening. One of them is Chad Meek, and the other one has an absolutely fabulous name. No offense intended to Chad, but the other guy is named Kevin. Well, you know, I got to be a little bit partial to that, right? Chad Meek is the nephew of George Van Tassel. Kevin Gage, well, you know Kevin Gage from movies and from television. You've seen him in such movies as Heat, Con Air, Blow, lots of television shows too, and other movies. That just happens to be the three I remember. But I'm an old guy and I forget stuff sometimes. But Con Air, I got to tell you, what a movie. That is one of my all-time favorite movies. And I am delighted that both of them are joining us here on the show tonight. I think it'll become very clear to you why both of them at the same time. Chad, welcome to the show.
Hello, Kevin.
And Thanks Kevin, well, we're glad to have you. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kevin, and I almost answered Chad's hello, Kevin.
Hello, Kevin.
How are you guys?
Great.
And let me ask you, Kevin, did you get my last message about how to watch the show?
I have not. Was that on my telephone?
I sent it on Skype.
No, I haven't.
Now, Chad, because he's on video with us, won't be able to watch the show tonight. You'll get to see it later. But if you check your Skype, it'll give you instructions of how you can watch the show live tonight. Just be sure you turn the audio down on it because there is a delay. Chad, you are the nephew of George Van Tassel, and of course that's a name I would know, but he passed away in 1978, I believe.
Correct.
And we have a large portion of our audience that were born after that and may not know who George Van Tassel was and is. So, can you just kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of who is George Van Tassel? Introduce us to him.
Okay, fantastic. Actually, he'd be about 103 years old, I think either today or tomorrow, so that's kind of weird, but or somewhere in here, he'd be 103 years old. George Van Tassel was probably one of the preeminent ufologists during the 50s and 60s. In fact, he was unequivocally the biggest name, larger-than-life leader of the space contactee movement, which is what they referred to back then. Now, I guess they call it UFO experience or whatever, but during that time, it was UFO contactee. And who he was? He was many, many things besides being my uncle and being a larger-than-life guy, but in a nutshell, he had many interests, including aviation and of course UFOs, and had many, many experiences that. But he, during the 50s and 60s, he did well over 400 radio shows, expressing his views on extraterrestrials based on his experiences, and countless radio shows all over the country. He was a big name, and he was a regular on a show called The Long John Neville Show, which you might know who that is.
Absolutely, I know who Long John Neville is. Yeah.
Larry King took his show over, but some of the greater banters that went back and forth was between my uncle and Jackie Gleason, who was also a regular. So we're kind of dating ourselves but a little bit here, but he carried a lot of weight back in the day. But essentially, he counted some of his friends. Howard Hughes was one of them. He ran in some very interesting circles and actually became the attention of the United States government with some of his views and some of the things that he had did, because I guess at the time they didn't like, well, I don't know if it's different now, but they didn't like mere mortals or common men experience or talking to UFOs. But it's exciting. Yeah, he broke into the aerospace industry in California, spent 8.5 years at Douglas, 2.5 years at Hughes Aviation, and at one time actually worked for him, and Howard Hughes later became a good friend. Finished his career at Lockheed Aircraft, which, some of the big names. And he had very, very top-notch positions, very high security clearance and things like that. Saw a lot. Ended up moving to a place called Giant Rock, which is located around 45 miles from Palm Springs in the high desert. And he went out there in 1947 literally lived inside for a time inside this very large 7 or 8 story freestanding boulder that was carved out by his predecessor who had actually came out there before. But anyways, he was a great man, and literally my whole life I've been dogged by him by one way or the other, whether it be going to Serbia. I kind of had to laugh because we were talking earlier this morning, and I ran into some scientists who actually knew more about my uncle and his work in free energy than I did, which is incredible. And it's so interesting. You have to go somewhere clear across the world to find people who actually knew him and was very familiar with some of his work that he had done in free energy and various health remedies and things like that. But that's a basic synopsis, Kevin, as far as who he is, and I'm sure we'll have more.
Oh, yeah, we're going to dive deep with George here. But let me say this for the audience. Most of my audience knows that I've been all around the world, and they know that I spent a lot of time in Croatia and Bosnia and Republika Srpska and Kosovo, Albania, Macedonia, Bulgaria, Romania, all that area. And folks, I found out today that Chad was in Bosnia he was working there at the same time that I was, during the same time period that I was. And never met him, but and as a matter of fact, I think most of your time there, I may be incorrect here, but I think most of your time there you were primarily in Sarajevo, right?
Well, actually, I kind of went from I was in Belgrade and Banja. I got around. I was actually in Srebrenica and Novi Sad. I was working on a refinery up there. Doing a feasibility study, getting it back up for my own company, and we had done some consulting work. But we had actually been involved with some mining consultant. And
well, if you were in Novi Sad and you were in Banja Luka,
Banja Luka, you bet. Yeah.
I'm surprised we didn't run into each other, but we did.
Well, the thing. This is what actually happened to me. I got there 2 days. Within 2 days, their equivalent of 60 Minutes wanted to talk to an American who was doing business over there, who they wanted to find out what Americans were thinking about them and what have you. So actually, it was a very strange event because I found myself the second day being on the equivalent of the Yugoslavian 60 Minutes. Mm-hmm. So you may have seen me and you didn't know it.
Could be. Could be.
Yeah.
All right. Back to George Van Tassel. George, how did he get involved? I mean, here's this aerospace guy. How did he get involved in all this UFO and ET stuff?
Well, actually, Kevin, how he he did it was almost, there are no accidents. First of all, we know there's no accidents. But a man named Frank Kreitzer came, before he got into aerospace, the heart of the Depression in 1930, a man named Frank Kreitzer came into his shop that he was working for, his uncle, George Rigover's uncle, as a mechanic. He was a fantastic mechanic also. That was one of George's fortes. But anyways, came in and had a conversation with him, and George was so absolutely fascinated with this guy's story. Frank Kreitzer was a German immigrant who had actually told him that the space angels had actually told him to go look for this large rock out in the middle of the desert. So as it turned out, in 1930, this is 17 years before he actually goes out and lives there, my uncle threw whatever food he had in his pantry in the back of this guy's Essex, gave him some cash, and was hopeful that they might find a return, because Frank Kreitzer said he was going to go out there and he would find various minerals and things like that. So that's how he got involved with that. And then from there, he kept on going, back and forth periodically, meeting with his friend Frank Kreitzer, which was an adept. There's been some rumors he was in the Great White Brotherhood. Some of the things that he had actually done, which I found out later, because I thought the world revolved around just my uncle, which he was bigger than life himself. But Frank had a lot to do with a lot of the interests that my uncle later got into. So that's how he got involved with it. And then, of course, Frank Kreitzer was literally murdered. He was eviscerated down in the inside the rock because he had actually he spoke broken English. He was the German. Of course, you got to remember, we're talking about the war years. So in 1941, a group of other authorities came out there. He also had a shortwave radio, which they didn't like much, and so he wouldn't come out. So what had happened is they decided to try to smoke him out and tear gas him out, and I believe it. What we know to have happened was it ignited a whole bunch of dynamite that he had used for various mining things, and it literally just blew his whole body, mind, and soul completely within the rock. So,
all right. So let's on our screen, people are seeing a picture of this rock. Now, this rock is how tall?
I believe it's close to 8 stories high.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's one of the largest freestanding boulders in the not only in the country but in the world.
And it's hollow on the inside.
And what Frank had done was he went out there and he hollowed the inside of it and made it a very comfortable room. To a very, very large room to live in. And as it turns out, and this is a part of the various mystery of him, he literally carved it out perfectly where it was a perfect ambient temperature year-round as far as how the sun would reflect on it, whereas in the summer it was cool, and in the winter it was warm. The temperature would only vary between 5 and 10 degrees inside of this rock. And as far as the whole renewable energy thing and sustainable living, for some reason this guy knew how to do that. And of course, I used to play down there when I was a young child during the 60s, and it a lot of incredible energy in there, really incredible. I mean, it just you're literally inside of a giant rock. And very, very similar to, I guess, what you'd feel like if you were inside the pyramids of Giza or some of that. But that is what, that's the story of the rock. And
okay, so now you, and the reason I kind of wanted to focus on that rock a little bit is because you and Kevin are together in a movie project now called Giant Rock, the movie. And we'll come back to you in just a moment, but Kevin, you're a well-known screen actor, and You got things going on. How did you get involved in a movie all about George Van Tassel and extraterrestrials?
Well, you're cutting out a little bit, Kevin, but I think you asked how I got involved with
right.
that and the movie mm-hmm. regarding George.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think just like everything in the universe, it was just meant to happen. And it all started down on a beach down in Baja where Chad and I met. I lived down there for about 5 years, and Chad moved in next door, and from what I recall, Chad says he was watching me with his binoculars through his window there. We were both beachfront. I was down on the beach playing with my young 3-year-old son. And he told his wife, "My God, there's my Uncle George. The guy looks just like my Uncle George." And long story short, he came down and he introduced himself, and we got to talking, and he asked me what I did, and I told him, you know, I'm in the movie business, and he asked, "Yeah, what do? You carry cables or you grip?" Or I said, "No, actually, I'm in front of the camera." And then he recognized me from one of the bigger movies that I'd done called Heat with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. And so we're talking more on the beach, and I've always been just a firm believer and truly fascinated with the thought of extraterrestrial life and the universe, and it's just a given that it exists. And when he brought up his Uncle George, I listened ever so intently and fascinated by him and Googled him, and later told Chad that you need to write a screenplay or a book, or you need to do something, because it's a fascinating story about this bigger-than-life man in an era that, oh, God, you remember the 60s, what a time.
Oh, yeah.
And this story was so fascinating. So, yeah, there we are. Chad wrote the screenplay, and about 8 months later, he gave it to me, and I told him, you know, I'll shoot right from the hip, and it's probably going to suck since you're not a screenwriter, but when I read it, I was bowled over. A man had performed an absolute miracle in my mind. You don't just write a Hollywood blockbuster screenplay right out of the gate like he did. And that's how I got involved, and I will continue to be involved until it's a finished project.
Okay, now are you producing this? Are you the producer of this?
I am, yeah. Chad's mm-hmm. executive producer, and I'm producing it, yes.
Okay.
And we're both pretty much producing it together.
All right. Now, Chad, you said earlier there's no such thing as an accident. So how do you account for the fact that this guy moves in next door to you on the beach down in Baja and looks like your Uncle George and turns out to be an actor?
How do I account for it?
Yeah.
I can't. I literally almost passed out when I saw him out there because I thought I was seeing my Uncle George. It was almost like even his voice and a lot of his mannerisms are so close to my Uncle George. I couldn't understand it. And this is one of this, you know, we talk about serendipity, but I've been having this with my...
Okay, pardon me, but we do have to step away for break. We'll pick up there, though, when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back right after this. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show. This evening, my guests are Chad Meek and Kevin Gage. They are together producing a movie about Chad's uncle, who is very famous in our genre. His name, George Van Tassel. Chad, you were speaking when the break took over, and I want to give you a chance to complete your thought. So the mic is yours.
Okay, good. Yeah, you know, I was talking about all the serendipitous events that have occurred in my life with my Uncle George, and there have been, you know, some very, very almost spooky things that have actually occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always trying to figure out why exactly, why me? because as we were talking earlier today, I was telling you, listen, I was pretty much wanted to be a straight man in society. I didn't really want to be involved with the UFO movement, and literally, I guess I was in a continual state of denial. But periodically, I would get these incredibly experiences, things that otherworldly that would happen to me, and I would always tag this to my Uncle George. So I think he's had a lot of workings involved with this whole process of making a movie and writing the script. In fact, I actually, like Kevin alluded to, I've never written a screenplay before in my life, and all of a sudden, I'm being able to remember things that I'd forgotten. I'm literally getting almost a transference of information at various dates and events. And, so that was really kind of strange for myself also. But, I mean, you talk about weird. I literally had one experience where I was talking to a UFO, researcher that had actually tracked me down. And I was talking on the phone, and all of a sudden I had a small toy spaceship, and this is something out of the Twilight Zone, that appeared in my hand. And you know, I've ran oil and gas companies, I've done some investment banking, it's just too weird. And so I'm talking to this guy, and I said, well, I didn't have any children that would have that, and I had this in the palm of my hand, and I'm looking at it, and I go, I don't know, and I'm talking to this guy on the phone, and I said, a small toy spaceship landed in my hand. And so then at the same time, my uncle comes on the television. I'm watching the television on Discovery Sunday, and he's standing in front of the Integraton by chance, by whatever. I've been rattled a little bit as far as some of this stuff here. So I've been trying to, you know, always extrapolate, well, what do you want me to do? And I think really what it came down to is that George had a lot to offer in both his books and his ability to move people to look up versus down. And I had a wonderful, I looked at a wonderful quote of his, and this kind of sums it up. He says, anyone who can break the bonds of automatic living, meaning stand up, sit down, don't say nothing, or shut up, can find the reality of his external self. And I was thinking about that, you know, as far as those words. You know, most of us are so busy busy trying, working for the man and what have you, we literally forget this other part of ourselves. And so it's been a great opportunity for both Kevin and I to bring this work and to let nobody forget what, in fact, they've actually did, especially some of these people during the 50s and 60s, for the movement and how they've actually got us to where we're at, which is a lot more aware than we would have ever been. So that's a great thing.
Kevin, are you appearing on screen in this movie?
Yeah, I sure hope so. If I'm playing George, starring in the movie.
Yes, all right, you're playing George. Yeah.
A lot more than I hope I'm on the editing room floor, that's for sure.
Well, you, like all actors, have experienced that too. It's not fun. But you're in control of this one, so you probably won't be on the editing room floor.
Come on, Kevin. You, of all people, I'm sure know that nobody's in control of anything.
Oh, that's true. Man, is that ever true. Okay, so, Kevin, you have rave reviews as being a character actor, and really, you know, you pull off such believable characters. And so let's talk about you doing George. I am not an actor, but I would suspect that in order to do what you do the way you do it, you've got to really kind of, it's not that you got to get into that guy, you got to get that guy into you, right?
Yeah, you know, I feel kind of silly sometimes answering these questions because, you know, you talk to a lot of actors and they do a lot of research and rehearsing with themselves in the mirror, and many different aspects of what they go through to portray whatever characters. I honestly don't give it a whole lot of thought. I do my due diligence, research wise. I know my lines. I have a very good sense of what role I play in the film, what role the character plays. And I'll be real honest, I go with my gut. Right off the bat, I learn my lines, and then I kind of forget them. I think probably like a good musician, you learn it and then you forget it. And when the camera starts rolling, like I said, I've got a couple of tricks in my pocket, but overall, I just say the lines as my heart or my soul, my energy chooses to throw it out there. Mm-hmm. And so far it's been working for me. And
boy, it sure has. It sure has. Okay, so now, Chad, you have just described for us sort of some mystical exchange between you and your uncle, because he is, of course, no longer physically with us. What do you think his goal is with this? What is it he wants to accomplish with this?
There's a lot of unfinished business, and unfortunately, he was either, we still can't figure out, he just right before his death, a month in his newsletter he'd sent out to his people, and he had hundreds of thousands of people that he sent in, the proceedings to. And the last one that he did, he said he just had got information through some of his channeling sessions that he'd figured out how to make the Integraton, which of course is this dome out in the middle of the desert near the rock that he had built. It's like a Moses temple. There's no metal involved with it in its construction, and it actually is built perfectly. I used to play in there when I was a small child, and the energy is just wonderful. It makes you feel very, very good being inside there only for a few hours. You really do feel recharged. You get into a very deep meditative state just by virtue of the construction of it. But he was always lacking something, which, at the time trying to talk to him to figure out, his knowledge, he was a follower of Nikola Tesla, and his knowledge was so far ahead of mine, you couldn't understand, if he told you everything about it. But anyways, he died too early, and we can't figure out what had happened to him. But the whole, Integraton was a rejuvenation machine designed and given to him by the space people, designed to actually allow us to live to 150 years old. And what we do know is that people who went inside that, there was some spontaneous healings of people that actually went in there. So it was very, very powerful in its own right. But his whole thing was to get it fully operational. Well, he never was able to do it. In fact, all his records, all the schematics, everything was looted 2 days after his death. I mean, no one could figure out where that was. And we couldn't figure out what he was doing in that motel room in Santa Ana at the time, which was a great distance away from Giant Rock. It was just very, very mysterious. So I don't know. There's still a lot of work to do. There's part of the reason that we want to, of course, do the movie and get him out there, and I'm taking a lot of dramatic license, with him, but we're staying pretty close to the story. But the big reason is that we want people to get on the internet and to look at what he was doing and bring some information together, and perhaps that would be a spark or an inspiration for something else. It's like we don't know whether, Kevin and I both have talked about this, we don't know whether we're doing a movie or a movie's doing us. You know, it just seems how things just keep, you know, moving in place, and the right people are showing up at the right time, and so we are moving forward with this thing here. But it's almost had an engine and an energy in its own self, in its own tempo, and which has allowed us to do this. So, so I don't have a clear, definitive answer. I can only, you know, suppose or, you know, about what it is, but in my heart of hearts, I think there's some work left to do, and even more importantly, I think we're coming to a point where we're going to be interfacing with extraterrestrials. I think that's going to come more and more and more and more, and I think this is all part of an awareness thing.
All right, so let's talk about the Integratron. Is it Integratron or Integraton?
I get them mixed up. It's either or.
Okay.
Integraton.
Integraton. Okay.
We used to call it the space machine.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Now you look, you grew up out there at Giant Rock. Right?
I did.
And so you were there when the Integraton was built?
Yes, I was out there. I played in it, played in there inside the rock. I was out there during the conventions when, you know, people from all over the world would go there. Some up to 13,000 people would be out in my backyard. So you go from about, in the whole, area up there, you go from about 100 people total, to a city overnight. So there were a lot of very, very strange events that, of course, occurred out there. Some of the notables that, you know, went out there were, of course, Howard Hughes, which I was told that I was eating some pancakes and eggs next to him while he was having coffee. He was a frequent guy that would take his planes and fly out on the dry lake, and he was a friend of my uncle, and actually he kicked in some money for the Integratron to get it started and get it built. So there was a lot of very interesting people and things going on. But this whole UFO thing, I mean, it was, in part why we want to do this story is this whole era is slipping away, that a lot of people don't even realize the particulars of some of the stuff that was going on out there. So what we're trying to do is get the story, and I'm probably the last person that is able to pull all this together, and also too, to give him some credit as far as what he was doing and what he did. So that's another part of it also.
You know, I'm going to show a picture now. I showed it earlier, but I'm going to show a picture now on our channel. And this is one of the flying saucer we got a break taking over. We'll come back to this picture and my comments about it. Ladies and gentlemen, we shall return right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is the Kevin Smith. And we are talking this evening to two very interesting gentlemen. We're talking to Chad Meek, the nephew of George Van Tassel, and we are talking to Kevin Gage, film actor, and they are working together on a project called Giant Rock the Movie. Giant Rock is the name of a location because it has a giant rock. A great big 7 or 8 foot, 7 or 8 story boulder that's been hollowed out and used for living space. Chad grew up out there and around his uncle all the time. And Chad just told us about, you know, right outside where he was living, which I believe I'm correct in saying you lived in the rock. Is that right?
Well, actually, I lived where I lived. I lived about a mile and a half to 2 miles from there, in a homestead with my grandmother. Our whole entire family, or a big portion of it on my father's side, had lived out there. It actually followed George and my Aunt Eva out there. And so we kind of, it was a kind of a modern day UFO colony, that, we essentially just, kind of hung out together out in the middle of nowhere and, had some interesting experiences. I was, just thinking about, my uncle too, in prior to the break, you were asking me why. Well, as far as doing some of this work, one thing that my uncle is a pure example. I mean, he's a living example of what one should be in this day and age. And he literally would stand up to anybody, right in the eye and tell them exactly what he had seen vis-a-vis a UFO or an extraterrestrial or anything. And he'd do this on television, on radio. And wouldn't bat an eye. And what also, when you talk about no accidents, bringing us back to our earlier conversation earlier in the day, you said that you told me that you said you didn't believe that there are UFOs. And so I actually, and this happens to me every time, I open up my uncle's book, When Stars Look Down, and those were his exact same words. I mean, it eerily. I mean, exactly the same. As far as I don't believe, in UFOs. I know UFOs, and there's a huge difference as far as knowing versus believing. So, at any rate, besides being an incredible story that involved everybody you could ever imagine, and every government regulator, and literally from Winston Churchill to Harry Truman. To everyone, they knew about this place called Giant Rock, and it's actually a crossroads. In fact, one of the things that my uncle, his dubious distinction was he was on Eisenhower's most dangerous persons list.
Oh, cool.
Which is an amazing thing for the era, especially with a guy with, who was, considered, he was against above ground nuclear testing, he was for free energy, and he ends up on Eisenhower's most dangerous list. And how did he get there? Well, in April the 6th, 1952, he was channeling the space entities that he normally would talk to. And incidentally, he was the original channel. The word channel came from him when he was explaining what he did. And an entity called NOMA had contacted him and told him that the space people were going to buzz the White House and the Pentagon. And so what does my Uncle George do naively? Sends them a telegram, a registered mail with a return receipt stating that. Mm-hmm. Well, and the amazing thing that happened is that on July 26th, July 27th, and July 28th, there were hundreds of ships that they were continually chasing over the White House. So that's what got him involved with a lot of very interesting intelligence agencies like COINTELPRO, which is the working body to essentially discredit anybody that had claimed that they had a UFO experience or had sighted. They were so nervous about my uncle and his followers and potential followers of losing a grip on the population, so they went to an amazing lengths to discredit him at any chance that they could, that they did. And they literally, there was a certain low-grade persecution which my uncle never understood because he was totally naive in that he thought he was helping, and he thought, being an American citizen, that they were on the same side. And he found out later that he really wasn't.
Well, let me tell you my opinion about such people as that, and I think I told you, and I know I told Kevin, and my audience is certainly well aware of my opinion of people like that. They stand up and beat their chest like they're playing tars and act like they're big bad men until you raise their kilt and turn the lights on, and then you see, oh my.
Nothing there.
Now I want to get to this picture because we live in a weird time. Where do UFOs happen? They happen outside, folks. You haven't ever seen a UFO inside of a convention center. Okay, if you want to see a UFO, they're in the skies, and they happen outside. And but now, you see, when we have a UFO conference or we have a UFO convention, it all happens inside. It's got to be climate controlled in there. It's got to be nice. You got to have Wi-Fi because people cannot, by any means, spend, you know, even 45 minutes without texting somebody about something. They're so plugged in, they've lost their minds. And but that is not how it used to be, and amazing things used to happen. Now, George Van Tassel used to have these conventions or conferences, whatever you want to call it, and you mentioned it, you know, it went from being your backyard to a city full of people out there. And so that's kind of what we're going to look at in this picture. This is one of those conferences. This is out at Giant Rock. And we're looking at people. It's kind of like a UFO Woodstock. You know, people
exactly.
are just, they're just out there. Now,
Summer
out
love.
There
yeah.
is in the sun, and, you know, it's not climate controlled. It's not, I'm sure, you know, really comfortable out there. But there they are, and there's a speaker's stand built there, and there's steps going up to it, and there's a big crowd out there. And now, as I said, UFOs don't happen in the convention center. But while George Van Tassel was giving a lecture at one of these open air, it happened more than once, by the way, but he's giving a lecture at one of these open air, out in the desert conventions. Somebody snapped a picture of what flew overhead, and there's a UFO flying right overhead. Fairly low altitude. You can see it pretty clearly. It's kind of egg-shaped. And it's absolutely marvelous. Inside, your air-conditioned, Wi-Fi'd, plugged-in, wired, high-tech convention centers where you have your UFO conferences and you pay all those big, big bucks because the promoters of that have to pay for that conference hall. When you're in there, you will never, ever, ever see something like this. But there it is.
That's a great picture, Kevin. I love that
photo.
There
you go. I know of it. I can't see it, but I know what you're looking at. It is great.
Yeah. And this is something, you know, instead of just showing pictures of UFOs, you go to a George Van Tassel convention out in the desert at Giant Rock, and they show up for the convention, you know.
Yep. Yeah, they're there for that, yeah. You know, it's so funny that you, in some of the attributes, you know, like the whole Integraton, and it was really meant to help people get well, what have you. It originally, the concept of it, it was that nobody would ever be charged $1 for, for visiting the Integraton, which, you know, that was part of his whole thing. His free energy stuff, which I can only, guess, because I talked to people who had known him, and he was running research and development on a lot of different things and a lot of experiments out there on free energy, and was getting pretty close at the subatomic level in the development of free energy devices. Here's another serendipitous story. I wanted to pitch.
Mic is yours.
No problem. You know what's so funny? A lot of the stuff when I segue, you know, as far as into some of these stories, I'll remember this. This is hands down some crazy stuff. And we're talking about renewable energy and all that. And so at any rate, I ran oil and gas companies, and we were invited to do a presentation out at Morton Thiokol, which is, they make rockets. And, it was during this is in the 1990s, right during the Iraqi war and what have you, and the oil price spiked up, and we had this huge exploration program we were doing out in the, Great Basin in Nevada. But at any rate, to make a long story short, I'm giving a presentation, and there's this one guy that won't get his eyes off me. And I, you know, it was really kind of unsettling because I'm making a presentation with my senior VP and our chief scientist and what have you, and this guy will not keep his eyes off me. So I talked to him after the break and after we gave the presentation, the first part of the presentation, and he goes, there's something about you. And I go, well, yeah. Well, he goes, where are you from? And I go, well, I'm from California. He goes, where in California? And I go, well, I grew up out in the desert out in California. He goes, where, I'm getting a third degree. I think it's an FBI agent or something. Asked me all this stuff. Anyways, I said, well, I grew up in a place near Landers. I don't know if you ever heard of Giant Rock. And he says, and his face dropped. And he goes, well, I was out there. And I worked with a person named George Van Tassel, on some free energy devices. And I literally was dumbfounded as far as how small our world. Anyways, he wanted to say that he had never met somebody with a self-made, self-educated man that had such control of all the sciences and technology and things like that. And he says, I would have never went ahead and got my PhD had it not been for your uncle. And he shook my hand and he thanked me for nothing. I mean, he says, I'm so glad to see you and all that. But it was one of those kind of events. And the other thing too, and getting back, Kevin, to what we're talking about, one of the reasons why we're doing the movie is right now we have a lot of, and I don't know whether it's disinformation or whatever. Giant Rock the movie is a real movie about real people, about real events, okay? Versus, like Avatar or something like this, which are, I call them cartoons. They're wonderful. They make a ton of money. There's Men in Black. There's all, the only thing that our movie, the only similar, when people ask me, well, what's it like? I said, well, there's some things that are like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is the small world. My uncle was the consultant for Close Encounters of the Third Kind with Steven Spielberg. In fact, he was the honorary guest at one of their premieres for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So what part of our thing is with Kevin, and what our idea is to basically get this story out because, well, and I'm sure that your viewers are really getting it. There's a huge story here, and we could, of course, call it the greatest UFO story never told, because it needs to be told within its own, within the context of what it is, not get too far away from it. You know, we've had some interesting events as far as people trying to option this screenplay and get it out of our creative control. And of course, Kevin, God bless him, we're two brothers from a different mother. he gets just as, irate. No, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do it right. And we're not going to let the, Hollywood studio system basically turn it into either a cartoon or whatever. It's going to be pretty much close. Now, it's not a documentary.
No, I understand.
Mm-hmm. But we're going to get the story out.
It's I think a term I've heard other people use is it's a docudrama.
Close enough. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's close enough. But there are other characters besides George also that are intertwined with this too. But the story stays pretty close to it, and that's the drive, and that's where we're at right now. We enjoy getting up and actually getting to work and doing and exploring, and we're always looking for very like-minded spirits that haven't sold out to the man or the system to come in with us and to participate at some level. So we're very excited. We're dedicated to getting this thing done and done right. And this won't go, I mean, this is not going to go anywhere else. This is going to stay right here with us.
Kevin, you've been in the movie business for a while. You know how difficult it can be to get a movie off the ground, and especially if you have the big boys out there putting obstacles in the way. You and I talked a bit on the telephone, and I made the comment that my audience has heard this many times, that a flashlight and a laser are both light, but only one cuts steel. It's the one that's focused. So I would imagine that these obstacles like big steel barriers that get thrown up in front of you, I would imagine that it would take a lot of focus to get through that. Am I correct?
I believe a lot of focus, a lot of perseverance, a lot of faith, a lot of belief in whatever it is that you're pursuing. And in our case, it's preserving George and his legacy and a story that just needs to be told. It's such an amazing story. You mentioned something earlier when we were talking, Kevin, about when you have to do something, it just gets done. And that's how I feel. I'm in Chad also. I can speak for him. We feel like we just have to, and that doesn't mean we get up in the morning and go, oh, I have to do this. Mm-hmm. It means there is this undriven force that is propelling us in that direction. And, we aren't flashlights, we are lasers, and anything gets in our way, we will cut through it and attain our goal.
That's good. That's outstanding. I know from talking to both of you that you, at least at this level, are very much of the same mind as I am, and that is that when somebody wants to criticize or ridicule, my attitude is, hey, you don't pay my freaking bills, and you certainly don't pay me enough to give me a bad day. You don't matter. You think I don't matter? You don't matter, you know?
I love your opening of the show where you were telling everybody that they matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad that people have to be reminded of that. The fact that we are nothing more than electromagnetic pulses, all of us, cells that are, all the same, people, trees, plants, birds, fish, all living things, we are made up of the exact same, I have to watch my mouth here, we are made of the exact same cells and molecules, just different masses and densities. And
that goes for all
matter. I've said this to Chad when I first met him, that I believe the wave of a hand changes the universe. If you take a second to do something, it is altering everything that happens in our universe. I truly believe that. You wave the hand, that takes a fraction of a second, but if you wouldn't have waved the hand, you might have stepped on a spider that would have bit a woman, that, a child would have become president, one of those deep and beneficial things, you know?
Do you know Dr. Brooks Agnew? Have you ever heard of him, Dr. Brooks Agnew?
I have not.
I have not.
Well, Dr. Brooks Agnew is an engineer. He's a physicist. He is an inventor. He was one of the pioneers in using radar and also sonar in doing oil exploration. He was one of the pioneers in that. And has some patents related to that as well. Dr. Agnew has a radio show called X Squared Radio. And very scientific, but they also explore some of the same things we do here, but from a little different perspective. And he's got a saying, everything you do will impact the universe. Do it on purpose.
Yep.
That's a good saying, isn't it?
It is a good saying. Well, it's quantum physics, and that's great. But and I love that, and I'll embrace that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, obviously we're in the fight. As far as to get this up on the silver screen all over the world. Also, but we are tremendously blessed. Our timing is actually impeccable. In the first place. We were doing research on UFO movies in this genre, and even though, there's not a lot of them, and a lot of them I hate, I don't like them, I don't like their storyline, but I went through them, and most of them made money. I mean, so, which is, so we're very blessed with this genre. I mean, it's not a, we're not doing something like a Ben and Jen or any of that kind of stuff. We're doing something fairly interesting about a fairly interesting time period. The other thing too is the
I want to correct you. I think you're doing something that is immensely interesting about one of the most immensely interesting characters that ever took to the stage in the world of UFOs.
You're absolutely right, and I fully agree with you. As far as that, so that's what we're doing. So we are blessed with what we're doing. But even having said that, the studios are losing their control that they had once had, and it's because of all the various applications that are coming up, and of course the population. Their interest in this genre. I mean, you know, we go from, we go up as high as 80% of the world's population, which is an amazing number, believe in some form of life in other universes and even in other planets and things like that. So we're within good company. So we have the demographics, and what we're doing is we're kind of dotting our I's and all that stuff and creating some very good shorts and work product. We're not going to be denied. The universe is on our side. The power is on our side. It's not on the linear, thinkers who think that another remake of Iron Man or Spider-Man is going to entertain. People are looking for good quality movies with a universal message, and that's what we have. And we're following George, and he's our protagonist, our main protagonist in the show, and following him in his Homeristic adventure. Now, he was we refer to him as a reluctant messiah. He didn't do it for money, he didn't do it for fame, he did it because it was the right thing to do. And if you could ever think of a world where you had people living in it that primarily did things because it was the right thing to do, I actually think, and I don't want to get too, religious, on the subject, but I think we would have a tremendously better and different world than we have now. Mm-hmm. And I think we could, so what we're using, we call this more the movie, so we're using my uncle, who is basically a light in our world, and we're using the symbolism of a giant rock to, in fact, inspire other people. And one of the things about this, it's an interesting, but it's an inspirational story also. I mean, I make it's you'll if you read the script, it moves very, very quickly. The movie, you'll know a couple things. One, when you sit down, you'll remember that, and then you'll remember when the lights go on and you have to go out of the theater because it moves and it's that interesting. And it enrolls people into this whole thing. I mean, this is not, we're not into the ethereal or some of this other stuff, the promise or that's not it. But this is real life with real people basically working with this whole idea that you were telling us about the doctor. The impact that people can actually have in other people's lives. And that's critical. We need more people like that.
Let me ask you a question. Now, I will warn you before I ask this question, I'm not broadsiding you. I am headed somewhere, though, and I'm going to ask both of you. Chad, are you in any way, shape, or form of part of... are you American Indian or partially so?
I am. I'm American Native. I'm a Cherokee on my mother's side. My whole family grew up, near Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
I know right where that is.
Yeah, right at the heart of the Cherokee Indian Nation. But yeah, I am. I'm a federal card carrying Native American, very, very proud of my heritage on my mother's side. It kind of gave me more, there's things that, and I know you're going to go somewhere, but there's that part, which is, I guess, more or less a spiritual side of me. And then on my father's side, which is where George comes in, again, I've been, who I am, no matter how much money I made or whatever I wanted in the material world, these two generational sides basically, from wherever, keep pushing me in the right direction to at least hopefully at some time period be able to emulate some of the things that my uncle did and some of my ancestors did.
Kevin, are you in any way Native American?
Not that I know of, but, I'm of German descent, mm-hmm. and I grew up in Wisconsin, which would make me, I guess, an American. But in the last 20 years, I've considered myself an earthling, and as I listen to you ask that, I've now realized that I'm just a universal entity.
Yeah. But being of German descent, was it Celtic?
Was it what, Celtic?
Uh-huh.
I really don't know, Kevin. I have not followed my family tree, and I don't know.
Okay.
That's funny. I'm real curious why you asked this, because my name is actually Celtic.
I am Celtic and Cherokee.
Okay, good. Okay. We're the same pod, as far as this goes. But Kevin, he doesn't know it, but he's Celtic. The Celtics actually ruled all of, before Germany and France split, it was all Celtic as far as that. So,
Celtoy.
So Kevin, you are mm-hmm. Celtic.
All right, so here's why I asked. Are either of you aware that the highest percentage of UFO / extraterrestrial experiencers are either Celtic or Native American?
I am aware of that. Yeah.
I was not aware of that. No, I mean, I've the Hopi Indians, that whole thing has fascinated me. In fact, they have a direct connection to giant rock itself. But no, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. And people who have mixed, if they're Irish, a lot of the Irish are of Celtic descent. So if they're Irish, Native American, very high percentage of them are UFO ET experiencers. I am not Irish. I am Celtic, German, Celtic, and Cherokee, and a few other things. But now, here is the next place I was headed. Do you recall in our conversation on the telephone today, Kevin, or yesterday, when did we talk? I can't even remember. My days run here.
Was it yesterday? Yeah, we're showing our age, Val. We talked yesterday and today.
Well, no, I'll tell you. Now, I'm going to tell you about age. Age means nothing. I absolutely challenge any 20-year-old to come work my schedule. I absolutely challenge any 20-year-old to work my schedule.
Yeah. You know, age does mean something to the powers that be, and that is why they did not allow George to open up that house to be 150 years old and mm-hmm. be as wise as we have potential to be.
Yeah. Well, I'm wise enough to know that the most powerful weapon on this planet and the one which all tyrants fear is a population who has learned the word no. They fear the word no, because at that point, it's just no. Their power is finished. Okay, now, here's where I was headed with this. All three of us are of descent that has a high percentage of us that are involved some way or another with UFOs and ETs. And there are people listening right now. We have new people join the show, listen to the show for the very first time every single night. And you're brand new to the genre. You're trying to figure out, should I don't know whether I believe in these UFOs or not. And I said to both of you, and you've quoted me here tonight, I don't believe in UFOs. I do not believe in UFOs. I don't believe in doorknobs either. They exist. I'm looking at one on my studio door. I don't have to believe it. There it is. I know UFOs exist because I have seen them. Now, you might say, well, I've never seen one, so I don't have that option of saying I know. Well, do you know that ultraviolet light exists? You never saw it either. Do you know that infrared light exists? Yes, you do. You never saw that either. Do you know you have a brain? Well, yes, you do. You've never seen that either. Okay? So there's nothing here to believe. The evidence is in. Now, guys, I'm going to lay something out here that is, for a lot of people, this blows them away. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States government, the United States Air Force, which is part of our government, a big part of it, has admitted in writing that UFOs exist. Did you know that? And they published it. And it is related to George Van Tassel.
Oh, Jesus, you'd think we'd know this.
All right.
Go ahead. I'm loving it.
That's true. No, it is true, yeah.
Yeah, so here's the deal. It's called Project Blue Book.
Yep.
All the debunkers say, oh, well, Project Blue Book showed that 95% of those were just identifiable but misidentified things. Okay. I mean, I don't care if it's a pair of flying underwear. If it's misidentified, it's misidentified. How many elephants does it take to prove elephants exist? One. Okay. Now, they came up with like 5% or something like that. Hundreds and hundreds of reports that they published that they said, we can't identify that. You know what that is? That is an unidentified flying object. I was in the middle of a rant in which I was saying that the U.S. government has put it in writing. For those of you who are saying, I don't know if I really believe this or not. First of all, let me ask you to just stand up from amongst the mushrooms for a moment and listen. They put it in writing. It's called Project Blue Book. And that Project Blue Book said that there were, the first report that was published said something like 785 or something like that, were unidentified. That is an unidentified flying object. That is a UFO. Then they came out with addendum reports and addendum number, I forget if it's 13 or 14. There were almost 2,000 that had been kept out of the original Project Blue Book report. These were the ones, ladies and gentlemen, that they could not identify and had the best witnesses, fighter pilots mostly, aerospace engineers, scientists who could use scientific language to describe what they saw. And the largest majority of those kind of reports wound up in that addendum that says we can't identify these. And that those are the ones they had the most information on, and they couldn't identify them. So they put it in writing that UFOs exist. It is a matter of official U.S. Air Force reporting. UFOs are real. Now, here's the kicker, and here's where it's related to George Van Tassel. The very first director of Project Blue Book was a guy by the name of Captain Edward Ruppelt. And you remember the picture that I showed earlier of the big crowd gathered out there in the desert, and they're beginning to gather around here. Somebody's about to start speaking. Out there in the desert, what you don't see is cars. The cars are parked back away and around the area. And back there next to the cars, there are people. They don't have booths set up. They have card tables. And their table is set up, and they got books and pamphlets and things that they're selling like they do at all conventions. Right out in the open air, too, by the way. And an interesting picture turned up. There's some people sitting there selling a book called My Flight to Venus, And there's a guy standing back there at the cars looking right into the camera. Ladies and gentlemen, that guy is Captain Ruppelt, the director of Project Blue Book. For those who are watching, take a good look. There's his face. I just zoomed in on it. That is Captain Edward Ruppelt. And he is the director, the first director of Project Blue Book. So, yes, interesting people of all kinds turned up at the Van Tassel space conventions. What did he call them, Chad? Space conventions or flying saucer conventions or what?
Yeah, space conventions. It was, a UFO space convention. Yeah, that's what he called them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Yeah. So not only him, it was very interesting, Kevin. I mean, I ran into Engelbert Humperdinck. I don't know. You know, some of these names, they just sound so bizarre. But
all know him.
There are a lot of people out there that was out there. You know, I talked about Jack Parsons. He was in and out of there. There was a lot of people, a lot of very, very noted people were very keenly interested, including, through some of my research, John F. Kennedy. He actually had his finger on what was going out in Giant Rock. So, it was a really happening place, precursor to Woodstock. I mean, I was, other than, the evangelical rallies or political parties or civil rights, that group of people in that place at that time was one of the largest massings of people that occurred. And so the next step, of course, was the Woodstock generation. But the flavor and the time period and what have you, I mean, it's just such an exciting time period. And I was there and I witnessed it. In fact, I'm one of the few, we're all getting old. Well, unfortunately, we're all getting older, but I'm one of the few people that actually was that's close enough that has any kind of memory. And through the years, I've been able to meet several of people that were close friends with my uncle and been able to Bruce Cathy, Captain Bruce Cathy out of New Zealand. I was doing some work with him. Gabriel Green, who actually ran for his riding candidate for president, actually got a lot of votes. So it was a very eclectic, magical time period, which begs to get on the screen because people like it. And I know for a fact that your viewers will love this show because it's close to their heart. And in fact, what I want to do, and before we get too far, because we'll probably run out of time, is I want to make sure that all your viewers go to our website because we're giving away all my uncle's works. In his books, When Stars Look Down, we're giving away the channeling tape so they can hear all his channelings that he had done. We're not charging a dime, and it's really out of the spirit because my uncle never even considered charging any of this stuff for any of this stuff. So anyway, out of the spirit of that, we want to give it away, and we want this information to get in the people's hands out there. So, at any rate, we want to do this.
Yeah. So, what is the website?
Well, it's Giant Rock the movie will get you there. And of course, if they want to email me personally, it's Chad@giantrockthemovie.com. But Giant Rock, you can Google Giant Rock, or you can go www.giantrockthemovie.com and you'll get there. We've got many, many pages, but you'll get there. GiantRockTheMovie.com or email me direct, Chad@GiantRockTheMovie.com.
Okay, now let's talk about the nuts and bolts side of all of this, and that being what's next? Kevin, as someone in the film industry, what's the next stage to get this movie where all of us can watch it?
You're cutting in and out a little bit, but I think I heard the question, what's the next phase to get this movie to where we can watch it?
Yeah.
First, before I comment on that, I have to say, Chad, I don't think you can see the pictures that Kevin brought up, but you do your homework, pal. I love that photo of the first director of Project Blue Book. Yeah. And I got to ask you, when did you actually recognize that man? Was that very recent?
You know, no. I had this picture. What I didn't know was that was a Van Tassel convention. I had this picture, and I did a show on Ruppelt a couple of years ago, I guess. And all I knew was that he was at a UFO convention. And so when we were preparing to do this show, I said, I wonder. And I did some research and found out where that picture was. That picture was out at Giant Rock.
Well, once again, I just about fell over. When you told me that on the phone today, I thought it was great. But when I just watched you pull up the photo there, that's... I'm kind of speechless. I don't know what to say about that, except it's, there you go. Why would the director of Project Blue Book have any interest in George Van Tassel?
And there he is, looking right straight into that camera.
I just love it. Back to your question, how this movie is going to reach the silver screen, mm-hmm. is it's going to reach the screen... Well, I don't want to get too deep here, but I guess, excuse me, I'm not supposed to use that language. I guess I can't get too deep on this show, but we will see the movie on the silver screen because, once again, there's that undriven force that keeps Chad and I going, and there are no obstacles that will get in our way. And the next phase is financing, which we've had actually offers to be bought out, if you will, mm-hmm. which Chad has turned down. And the next phase is just that. It's money and pre-production, and then the actual shooting of the film, then post-production, and then distribution, and onto the silver screen. In a nutshell, it doesn't sound too difficult. The way it's going to get to the silver screen is because we just have to do it. And like I said earlier, it's not that I wake up and go, oh God, I have to do something. There's this undriven force that is compelling me to finish this feature film and preserve George and his legacy and enlighten the planet and hopefully point us all into a direction of higher consciousness, which is something that needs to be done. The powers that be have turned the planet into, I'm not sure how to even explain what the world is today. I feel like we're all a bunch of squirrels on a running around a little squirrel cage.
Well, you're right. Let me teach you a magic word, though. Now, this magic word is so powerful, it's unbelievable. And all you have to do is plug this in and freedom happens. You ready? No. That's it.
There it is.
I believe me. You guys don't know me. Believe me when I tell you, if you talk to anybody who knows me, that isn't just talk. I am unplugged from control, man.
Yep.
And you know, I think you two guys are too, really. But it's a magic word for everybody listening. Learn to say it. No. Freedom happens.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I believe it wholeheartedly.
Yeah. All right. One of the big problems behind every production, whether you're talking about movies or books or music or whatever, any big production, is getting the financing. Does that look like that's going to happen?
I is it me or is it you, Kevin?
Well, Chad, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, it will happen. And really, I tell you why it's going to happen. People are really looking for yield. And they're actually looking for honest production companies that'll actually do what they say they're going to do, and the purpose and of it. But the movie industry is changing, and really how deals are being structured now, which is what how we're going to structure ours, is essentially it's a the investors who put up the money for the budget, they get 100% of our gross revenues until they get that money back. And then what they do is they, after they get 100% of their money back, then they get 20%.
All right, we have to step away for break. And we'll be back to hear more about that right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, folks. And that means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. We're talking with Chad Meek and Kevin Gage, and we're talking about the movie they are making called Giant Rock the Movie. It's about the life and work of George Van Tassel, who is, by the way, Chad Meek's uncle. And he grew Chad Meek grew up out there at Giant Rock and was very much around George Van Tassel all of his life growing up. All right, Chad, you were wrapping up on telling us about the financing and the way that works and how the movie is going to happen.
Okay, right. Like again, like I was saying earlier before the break, you know, we're structuring our deal like a lot of the mid-range movie deals are, which is essentially. Investors, they get their money back 100%, and then they, after they get that, they revert to a 20% return, gross return of all the proceeds that we end up with as producers and what have you. So it's really a fair and equitable deal. But even saying that, for instance, I don't know how many listeners are out there for you, but I know it's considerable. And for every person that's heard this radio, program tonight, there's a couple things you're going to walk away. They're going to remember Giant Rock. They're going to remember this. And a big portion of the expense of a movie is not even the production of the movie. It's in the distribution. In fact, it usually goes about one-third of the production budget to two-thirds for the distribution budget. So, and how do you get distribution? Well, you buy ads and you do TVs. Well, tonight, my friend, and I, you know, I'm not having any more children, but if I were going to have any more children, I would seriously consider naming them, Kevin, because, you know, this is real stuff and people are listening and this whole thing that we're doing is going to leave an indelible imprint on their brain. So when the movie does come out, they're going to say they're going to have a choice of going to various movies, and they already like this genre. So they're going to go to our movie over the latest Arnold Schwarzenegger or Stallone or whatever cartoon. They're going to see our movie. And this is really beneficial, buddy. I mean, really, as far as with what we're doing within the genre. And I'm really glad that we can participate with you. But that's just how the rule works. I mean, it's worth a fortune to actually have people hear our story. Because we don't have to pay for a trailer to be advertised on the TV. We will, but we won't have to pay as much, and that gives us a tremendous amount of bargaining power and leverage when we go in for distribution deals. So, and again,
let me say this: you guys are certainly welcome to have a copy of tonight's show, the video, to use if you want to use it. It's available to you. I think this is a marvelous project. And George Van Tassel is absolutely a fascinating individual. Whether you agree with the things that he wrote and the things that he said, whether you agree with that stuff or not, he is absolutely a pivotal figure in the world of UFO investigation and research. And besides that, he's more interesting than the inner workings of a Swiss watch. I mean, he's just an interesting guy. Kevin, let me ask you this. When do you project that you'll be able to start shooting this movie? Oh, you know what? Kevin, it helps if I push the button so we can hear you. All right. When do you project that you'll be able to start shooting this movie?
I would like to think within within the next 6 months to a year, we will begin actual shooting. I think in 6 months from now, we'll be in pre-production and right around 2014, I believe, we'll be shooting.
And how long do you project that it will take to shoot this?
You know, tough call. Technology is moving so fast these days. But I'm thinking, take a look at our budget breakdown. It's probably going to be a good 6 week shoot.
Well, that's really not all that long, is it?
Nope, I don't believe it is.
I mean, you know, if the weather cooperates and everything happens like it's supposed to, you'll be done start to finish shooting in 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's. I think that's par for the course for a film to be shot. A lot of the lower budgets, I mean, my God, they've been shot in 10 to 20 days, and some of the bigger ones, you know, they go 3 to 3 months, and some of the really big ones are 6 months, but I think 6 to 8 weeks we'll have this finished. Shooting, that is. Talking about pre-production and post and all of that, I mean, you know, we're talking about a good 8 months or a year.
Yeah, post-production is tedious. Very tedious. And for it to be done right, it really is.
Yeah.
Are you going to handle the post-production on this yourself, or are you going to have it done?
Are you talking to me? Or
Yeah, to you, Kevin.
Oh, you're
Kevin.
Still talking to myself. No, Chad and I both will have our hands on. We'll be full-on hands-on, most definitely. But no, we will have, you know, qualified people in the editing bays and, you know, doing the soundtracks and things of that nature, yeah.
Since you've been involved with this, Kevin, have you come across information about George Van Tassel that you didn't know that was amazing to you?
Oh, geez. You know, if you read his book, When Stars Look Down, yeah, the answer to that question is an absolute yes. We don't have time, or am I either articulate enough to speak of some of the things that he's written about and who he is. But I literally, when I read When Stars Look Down, felt like I found God. It was like I found the answer. That, and it's hard to articulate. Like I said, but you and I spoke about this earlier. We are, and I think I mentioned it on the show, you know, where we realistically know who and what we are on a cellular level. And George was a man before his time that knew this, and he just, there's just so many aspects of this man, I don't even know where to begin.
Well, as I said just a couple of minutes ago, this guy, folks, you read the things that he wrote, and read about the work that he did. He's whether you agree with him or you disagree, doesn't matter. This is one of the most interesting individuals you're ever going to run into. And I'm very glad that a movie is being done where we can run into him in yet another way, and in a visual way. I think it's going to be a great thing. Chad, and Kevin, we're out of time, but I want to thank both of you for being with us this evening. This has been fascinating, and I really am looking forward to this movie. So, Chad, thanks for being here.
Oh, you're welcome, Kevin. Pleasure.
And, Kevin, thank you for being here.
No. Thank you, Kevin. It's been a sheer pleasure. It truly has.
Both of you, if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment so we can chat just a little bit after we go off the air. Ladies and gentlemen, something to look forward to, huh? Giant Rock the movie. I know we'd like to go see it next week. That's not going to happen. It takes a little while to build these things. But they are working on it every day, and so it will be coming. And when it does come out, You guys get your lawn chairs, your sleeping bags, whatever it takes. Get out there, get in line, and stay there till you get your ticket. All right? And be sure that you see Giant Rock the Movie. I also encourage you to go over to the website, Giant Rock the Movie, giantrockthemovie.com. Head over there and check out all the stuff that they've got for free for you to read. All right, that's going to do it for this evening. Wish we had more time, but we don't. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.